to another episode of Pit Lane Parlay.
We are joined on the next episode of the Pit Lane Parlay Experience with Harding Steinbrenner Racing with a Vice President Vince Kramer. Vince, how are you feeling about Road America heading into the first practice that's about to take place here?
Well, we feel pretty good about it. I mean, we've been good everywhere we've gone, right out of the truck, which is a big step. If you're not good out of the truck, you're always chasing. Colton's been quick to adapt the changes necessary for the car. Very good at relaying that information to the engineer and in a parlance that he can understand, and the symmetry there is very good. So I think we're in good shape here. Would have been nice, we had a test scheduled here for last week. Would have been nice to get that under our belt, but you know, I feel pretty confident.
So before we dive into some of your history, I know you've been around IndyCar for quite a while. You're a spotter on the ovals.
Yep.
You're a vice president. So what are your Harding Steinbrenner responsibilities?
Well, basically just to make sure, as a, like any other business, that we're functioning smoothly. Logistics, making sure the guys and the equipment are getting where we want it to be. Some future planning, budgetary, making sure that, you know, that we have our hotel rooms, that everything's the way it's supposed to be, and tidying up all those details. It's a high-level management position, not much different than any other business.
What's it like? I know, you didn't get too much spotting done in Indianapolis during the race, unfortunately, but spotting for Colton in Texas must have been a thrill with how aggressive he was and what he was able to do with that car. What was that like?
Well, Mike, I got to honestly say, I've spotted a few times, a bit in my past, to other drivers. That was probably the most dominant car I've ever seen on the track. The mid-race, it didn't look like it, but he was just basically saving his equipment, being smart, saving himself and his equipment. Didn't have to tell him much. Well, I asked him after the race, I said, you know, what more could I have done to help you? That's a conversation we have after every race. And he said, well, I like when you count down the cars that are closing on me from the back. I said, well, I didn't have to do that very much. You know, so he had a dominant car. It wasn't just a dominant car. It's a car driver package, and he was doing things I didn't see any other cars out there doing. It would have been a lot of fun to have that shootout at the end.
Kind of, it felt like to me it was similar to how Alex Rossi was at the 500 last year, and that he was able to do things that it didn't seem like other cars were really able to do.
Yeah, I think that's a good corollary. Like I said, he went around the outside of guys and won. He had a pretty kind of a signature move up there, and one I picked up on early, that he had a way of setting guys up and then driving down the back straight and getting them in and going into three, because he could really drive off a two. It seemed like he could put the car almost anywhere he wanted to on the track and make it work.
So one thing we asked Colton back in Detroit, and we did our mid-season recap, is how he would grade himself on the air. Now, Colton obviously is pretty hard on himself, and I think he gave himself a B. In our episode that all the listeners probably just listened to today, we gave him an A. Where do you think Colton? How do you think Colton's done so far in the first nine races this year?
Well, I think he's done excellent. I mean, obviously there's a learning curve with a first-year driver in the series, but he sure doesn't act like a first-year driver. We've had some horrible luck, but that's part of racing. You know, we've had some good fortune, not as much as we'd like to have. And I'd probably give him a high B, maybe a low A. I mean, we had a bad pit stop in Long Beach, and he was driving the car maybe a little harder than he should have and got into a situation. The Grand Prix at Indy, I'd still want him to do what he did there. You know, that's it's a racing move. I want a guy to be aggressive. So I would probably give him an A, to be honest.
So I'm going to go slightly off racing here and challenge you with this question. You're a big Blues fan. Congrats on them winning the cup that we were talking before we started recording here. If you had to pick a St. Louis Blue to become an IndyCar driver, who do you think would be the most successful?
Oh, that's a good one. If I didn't have to worry about size, if I was going to size, I'd probably be somewhere like Fabry or Shin.
Yeah.
Shin would probably be pretty good, ex-Flyer guy, you know?
Of course.
We stole from there.
Yeah.
But if it's work ethic and dedication and everything, Ryan O'Reilly's amazing. He's amazing. I mean, just mid-year, I was watching him, and I'm like, how did we get this guy? You know, I mean, his work ethic. And from everything I hear, and I have a couple friends on the team, Colton Pareko, Alex Petrangelo, in the locker room, he's amazing. And that's a huge part of a race car driver. Interaction with the team. Colton Herta here, his interaction with the team, the engineers, the guys want to do more for it. And so that's an intangible I don't think you can put. And so in that case, if I didn't have to worry about Ryan's size, maybe Pat Maroon, too, because I wouldn't want to mess with
him. Another former Flyer.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to mess with Maroon. You know, O'Reilly, would probably be the guy.
I think you made every East Coast, or at least every Flyers fan that listened to the show, a little sad, because I know they were all very jealous that he did not go to the Flyers in the offseason. Anyway, back to racing. You've been around IndyCar for a while. I know you were a mechanic for Team Penske back in the day. Take us through your racing background.
Well, my racing background, my oldest brother was a drag strip racer. First car I remember was a 63 Belvedere with a 383 in it. We'd go to the drag races. He taught me a little bit more. Through high school, I played around with cars, made a little bit of money tuning up, changing oil. I went into a different direction and started working in management and restaurants and stuff, and then I needed a change, and I actually started doing show cars for Penske and worked my way up. Did show cars for Roger, drove his personal bus, drove trucks for a few years, knew I didn't want to do that, took every spare moment I had to learn the car, to learn the parts. I started stocking parts in the truck so that I knew what they were. My crew chief, Rick Reinemann, was fantastic to me. When we got time off as a CDL truck driver, you have time to do for your release from duties. I took that spare time to learn to work on the car alongside of Rick. Did that for a couple years, and then was promoted into a mechanic, lead mechanic. Moved to Indianapolis to be a crew chief for Helio Castroneves in his rookie year, and then to team management. Went on to work in the series. Worked in the series as a race director for Indy Lights, technical director for Indy Lights, race director for MX5. Alongside of Brian Barnhart and race control and IndyCar.
So would you say, you know, since you've worked on the, you know, IndyCar / Indy Light side and on the team side, is there one that you prefer over the other?
Oh, that's a great question. You know, I've been a coach, a youth hockey coach, for like longer than I've been in racing. I've been in racing over 30 years. So I like the young kids. I mean, Colton's great. You know, the chance to be able to help define their careers and define who they're going to be as a person, I think that's great. But the competition at the IndyCar level, there's just nothing like it. I mean, I can't really – that's one I really can't answer. You know, I'm happy in either side, the developmental side, bringing the kids up and seeing them succeed, or the reaching the pinnacle of your sport and winning a Borg or winning a championship. I relish the day we bring the first Indy 500 win to this team.
And I think we all believe it'll happen at some point. So speaking about Indy Lights, the car count is slowly starting to rebound. And I think the guys, you know, that are handling that are doing a really good job at trying to, you know, rein in the costs and whatnot. Is there anything you think they can do to maybe help get the car count even higher?
Well, I think it's really a difficult the road to Indy is one of the greatest programs out there, and the fact that there's scholarships every step along the way. You don't get that in any other sport in reality. I think that's fantastic. I think the issue is that most of this, there's not a lot of sponsorship availability. There's not a lot of guys that want to sponsor an F2000 or a pro team or an Indy Lights team. So this is a dads are benefactors stroking checks. So if you look at, there's three steps, and you're going to spend probably 2 years in each step. That's 6 years of somebody stroking big dollar checks. I think maybe the way is to find a, to eliminate a step or merge a step. And I really would have to screw down and do some thinking. This is a discussion we had when I was at IndyCar.
Yeah.
Dan Anderson does a great job with that whole Road to Indy program. So I think there needs to be, it would be great to get some more buy-in from the IndyCar teams, that there has to be a financial reason for IndyCar teams to buy in.
Yeah.
You know, there's got to be a reward for them. They got to make some money to offset some costs for their IndyCar program, or tie drivers in like a farm system and other sports. But I think if you could merge two steps and put them on track a little bit, and I know that's dangerous with open wheels, but are you going to have to take one and take a step back with one and make it really like no aerodynamics, make it a true driver car that no wings and stuff, there, so you bring the cost way down for the first step, and then you make a pretty significant step to the second one and have some performance and some aero and get them on ovals and things like that. So I think one of those two, and again, it would take some research, but I think one of those two would be the right way to go. I really like the no wings, no aero package, because you're teaching a driver to drive a car. You're talking about 14-year-old kids and stuff at that point in time, right? So,
switching gears slightly, you know, IndyCar added some aerodynamic pieces on the ovals this year. Do you think they helped? The extra gurney flaps on the front and rear wings, have they helped get a little bit more downforce to make the racing more competitive?
I think so. I mean, it still takes a brave move on ovals for the drivers to get around people. You get the turbo wake or the aerodynamic wake behind the car that upsets the aero on the front wing. There definitely seems that there was a gain. Drivers at Indy this year were in Texas seemed like they were able to drive closer together without having the aero wash behind them, per se. It's such a fine balance there, and the guys are doing a great job there with that. You could always want more, you know. So you're balancing between driver's safety of pack racing and getting them too close and too tight where they can't get away from one another. And if you have a good car and performance, you can't get away from the guy. That's not necessarily good either. You know, I know it's a balance between entertainment, performance, safety, and it's a difficult balance to maintain. But yes, to answer your question, Mike, I think they've made gains.
Awesome. I think we'd all agree with that here. We'll wrap it up with one last question. Again, thanks for your time this morning. The weather, well, it's rained about every day for the last month in both Indianapolis and the Philadelphia area. It's beautiful right now, but Sunday is looking like there's a couple bands of rain coming in. Do you look ahead to that and try to, you know, practice maybe a little bit of how you might set up the car for those type of conditions, or are you solely focused on, listen, we're only worried one day at a time right now?
That's a good question. Yeah, really, you're only worried about, you can't really set up for the rain without rain. You know, you can't put rain tires on it. You don't know what the car is exactly going to do. We know what we do if it gets wet. We know we're going to add downforce to the car. You know, we're going to move brake bias and things like that, but change camber around a little bit. So, no, we won't practice for the wet unless we have a wet session, and then we'll be careful there.
Simple enough. Well, I hope everybody enjoyed this week's episode. Vince, again, thank you very much, and congrats to your St. Louis Blues.
Appreciate it, Mike.
And good luck this weekend.
Appreciate it.